Mr. Armour, good morning to you. Now, we need to give everybody a couple of minutes to get in and out of the courtroom. And that appears to have been accomplished, so you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Jeff Armour, and I represent the appellants in this matter. And to be frank, as you probably noticed, this is one of those cases that an attorney has that will give him gray hair. And at age 34, I have, as a consequence, more gray hair than I probably should. But what I haven't had to deal with on a daily basis, unlike the prisoners who are here today, is the day in and day out a deterioration of their condo association, deterioration of their property within that. It is the subject matter, ultimately, of this case. And there's a lot of ground to cover in this case, but it reminds me of what this same district court had another case in Florida Lawns that the appeals court characterized as containing a labyrinth of legal problems. And I think that's what we have here today when there are numerous issues dealing with errors before the receiver sale. This is involving a receiver appointment, receiver sale, confirmation of sale, and errors that occurred before, during, and after the sale. In the meantime, for the last 27 years, the property has gone downhill and claims have experienced several elements of living. It's a four-unit complex overlooking Lake McConaughey in Keith County. It used to be a beautiful complex. It's owned three parts by the appellee and one part by my client. My clients have had to live there and have been the only owners on the resident or on the property for many years, while the absentee owners allow sex offenders, drug users, felons, and general chaos to ensue during the past several years as the property has deteriorated. We had a trial a couple years ago. We had a favorable trial court order. It was appealed. We cross-appealed. We won on the appeal and actually gained more funds than were awarded at trial. And then issues continued to happen. And after a period of about a year, my clients, frustrated, that they won the trial court level, they won the appeal level, and all these issues are still happening. Condo association isn't being recognized. Meanwhile, the appellee has majority votes, and the same issues are ensuing. So they go to the district court and ask for relief. They ask for enforcement through an injunction. They ask for enforcement through contempt, which was initially granted. Injunction was initially granted, and then all of a sudden, the trial court seems to become frustrated with continually having to deal with this case. And order a sale occurred and an appointed receiver to take care of that. It's an end all be all. Yet we're here today.
Was there a law that made that determination?
I question the trial court's authority, and I think yes. Arguably before the court on equity at this point. And I think it goes to equity of the first assignment of error. It's dissimilar to the Florida Lawns case where there was statutory guidance for dissolution of a corporation or an entity. In this case, it was a motion that the judge wanted and a motion that the judge ordered without stating any basis other than parties going to get along.
The motion you talked about before, didn't that come from the previous order that if things didn't improve, a receivership could come?
An order for a future order. It's from the
kind of a warning
from the February 24th.
If your argument the court did not have authority to order a receivership, is within that case, that certain case?
I think it's in question, and I think that's not the that's part of the silence of error, but it goes all the way back to that.
Why didn't you appeal the order?
Well, you know, at one point my client could actually ask for a receiver to manage the property, not for the sale of the property. Because all that had to happen was the receiver comes in, these guys take it along, the receiver takes over the management of the property, assesses dues, sets special assessments to fix the property. And initially, we asked for that, and it was denied.
A receiver in perpetuity?
That would be determination of district court until, with status hearings, I would presume, to determine the status of the property as the receivership continued. But instead, that was denied approximately a year later. Appellee asked for a receiver at some suggestion of the court and gets it for immediate sale, which then did not occur for over a year. And there are numerous issues with the receiver's activities during that year that lead to some of the other assignments of error.
The order from which you appealed was not the order that appointed a receiver, correct?
That's correct.
And you did not appeal from the order that appointed a receiver?
That's correct. And going back to her question, my clients at that point had no way of knowing how it would turn out. And in an optimistic sense, okay, we've tried everything else. Maybe the least we can do is get this absentee owner out of there, buy our own property back, or retain our own property from order of the court.
So do you agree that under the receivership statutes, that order appointing a receiver would have been appealable as if it were a final order?
Yes, Your Honor.
So isn't the corollary of that that if you don't take a timely appeal from that order, you cannot later attack that order?
That's correct. And the assignments of error, I do not specifically say we're appealing a prior order that was outside of an appealable situation. The argument is it would go to equity as far as the equitable nature of forcing the sale, and then down from there on how the proceeds were commingled, the values were commingled in the other assignments of error. So that's correct. We're not appealing an order from a year ago or an order from 2 years ago. But it's important to see that in a totality situation in the terms of equity and how we got to this point and how the prisoners have been deprived of their property rights, been deprived of their property value, and the appellee has been unjustly enriched by the entire situation of the receiver, by the receiver is focusing outside of the scope of his authority to remodel, fix up, and boost the sale of his properties. Meanwhile, the sale was conducted in the nature that commingled the values, and we have no way of knowing what value can be attributed to my client's property. This isn't like a farm sale. There are not undivided rights here, property rights. It's very divided.
And so what is the relief you want from us?
Well, that's why we're here, Your Honor, and what we're asking for is the sale to be reversed, thrown out, and I would suggest that the court issue specific mandates based on the history in this case and the prior appeals, specific mandates to the trial court as far as directives of reversing the sale and the conduct of a future sale, allowing for the individual purchase of the properties based on the nature of the properties. And I would reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Mr. Burke, good morning to you.
Gary Burke, counsel for defendant and appellee Jim Starry. May it please the court, I would like today to focus on equity. And part of that equity question now comes down to the fact that this court, acting in a de novo capacity, has to review all the factual background in this case. You will then, at that point in time, fashion some remedy that will follow forward in, once again, the equitable manner that this case comes before you. I would specifically state to you, though, that you need only review the February 2014 order of Judge Rollins. And in that order, he specifically stated that both parties, Mr. Priesner and Mr. Starry, they were at that point in time of February 2014. A trial had been conducted. Damages had been awarded to Mr. Priesner. The matter had gone up on appeal, and additional attorney's fees were added at that point. My client paid that judgment at this point. That issue is done. However, in that very same order, Judge Rollins ordered these two litigants that they could do one of two things. They were to either sit down, act like adults, have an association meeting, elect a board of directors, get a budget in place, and run this association for these four condominium units. If they did not do that, he gave them 10 days to do that. 10 days. If he did not do that, if those two parties did not do that, they were then ordered by the court. You will. Either party can come in and ask for a receiver to sell the property at public sale or to run, have a receiver come in and run the condominium association within 10 days of a February 2014 order. Here we are in 2018. We're still wondering why no one can follow Judge Rollins' order from February 2014. My client, I'll admit, he took almost a year before he retained me to come in and get this receivership established at that point in time. Now, for purposes, and what I would respectfully request from this court is as follows. You have, under the Floral Lawns Memorial Garden Association case, you have that ability to do the de novo review, but you don't have to go any further than that Floral Lawns Memorial Garden case. That case specifically stated in that decision that when you appoint a receiver, that person manages the condominium association, he is to preserve and protect the assets. What that receiver would do in that case, or is in any receivership case, you sort of act like a CEO, CFO, CIO, CLO. You've got to run that property. You've got to preserve it. You've got to protect it. And in this case, that's exactly what happened here. A receiver was appointed to take care of this property, four condominium units. And so in that particular capacity of dealing with those units and dealing with that receivership authority, you as a body have already stated that you're going to follow the law which you've established under that Floral Lawn Memorial Garden Association case. So from that standpoint, equity today is being addressed. You have the ability to follow that through. This receiver that was appointed and Judge Rollins' actions follow the equity powers of a court, in particular a trial court. I note today that we have two trial judges that are sitting by special designation with the Supreme Court. They, more than anyone else, probably have the most contemporary knowledge of having appointed a receiver to manage a property at this point in time. And based upon that, I would submit to you that the trial judges that are sitting here today would assert to all of you as remaining body members that this receiver has the authority to do what he did. Judge Rollins has the authority to do what he did in the equitable fashion that he did. And note, in Floral Lawn Memorial Garden Association, what was Judge Rollins told not to do there? He couldn't dissolve that association. And in this case, the association was not dissolved. Corporate law was followed at this point. Judge Rollins didn't say, okay, you two guys can't get along. You're done at this point.
With a de novo review, do we have the power to do all of the things that Mr. Armour just asked us to do?
I believe at this point in time you have equitable power. I think if you agree with Mr. Armour that these errors that took place, which I submit to you are self-inflicted wounds for Mr. Priesner, you as an equity court can do a great deal here. But I submit to you at this point in time, Judge Rollins' order is the applicable order. He basically told these people, the association is going to be run, or I will see one of these two parties will be allowed to come forward and appoint a receiver at that point.
Is the receivership order, in your view, help me on this, consistent with 25-1081?
Yes, I believe it is fully consistent, Your Honor. It's a seven-page order appointing a receiver. And that, as I note before, a receiver has great power, great authority, as does a trial court in an equity situation. So I believe that that receivership order did indeed fit the statutory scheme.
So it's under the statutory scheme in your view and tailored to the facts?
Yes. Yes, I believe so. I believe the court, you have equity power. Vast, vast equity power. And if you do not appoint a receiver, well, what are receivers for? They're to make sure the trial courts don't get logged up in being the CEO, the CFO, the CIO, having to run an association at this point. That's what a receiver is for. And the power of a receiver is very broad. And in this case, the appointment of that receiver did not exceed the statutory definition, and it does not exceed the equity powers of the trial court, nor this court in your de novo review. So to that extent, I would state that this receiver, when he was appointed, did everything he was supposed to do as a receiver. He protected the property. He sought insurance. He had repairs done to the units. It went to a public sale. The auction's already...
Do you think the outcome was ultimately fair to both of the parties?
To both parties? No, my client has three units. Mr. Prieser only has one. If there's anybody hurt here, it's my client. He's lost three units, Your Honor. But that's equity. That's what happens here. You can't parse this thing out and say, well, one person sitting over here with one unit will treat him differently. No, it's a condominium association. It's a condominium group. And my client's lost three condominiums at this point. So if we're just looking at simple equities and just balancing the scales here, my client's the clear loser in this. But he has to live with the orders of the court at this point. There was a public sale. So at this juncture, you can't parse out Mr. Prieser and say, well, you know, we'll treat you differently. You have different property rights. My client owns three of those units. Why is he being treated differently? Why should Mr. Prieser be told that you have a different position in this matter? All parties lost. Regrettable, but all parties lost. It's interesting. I note in Judge Connolly's decision, that I have it here, but I'll paraphrase it. Justice is blind, but it's not stupid. Well, in this case, I would submit to you that in that theological sense, Themis is holding the scale of justice and the sword of justice, but she's not blind. She's just blindfolded. At a point in time, Themis will take off that blindfold. She will determine where those scales of justice have weighed out. And if the sword of justice is needed, it is then dispensed. But we're not talking blind justice here. The blindfold's been removed. My client's been hurt as bad, if not more seriously, than Mr. Prieser at this point. He paid damages already. This has been going on for years. He knows he's done wrong at this point. A lot of this was done before I got involved, but that's neither here nor there at this juncture.
Was the sale procedure done correctly? Was that the right way to sell the property? Was that the
yes.
only way to sell the property?
Yes, it was, Your Honor, because at this point, the lien with Adams Bank and Trust that's being held by my client that's owed, that is being addressed. The condominium association lien, which is what Mr. Prieser is most upset about, he held a unilateral meeting, as did my client. He tried to hold a unilateral association meeting as well, in direct contravention of Judge Rowland's order. He did that in direct contravention, as did Mr. Prieser. But the sale went forward. All liens have been satisfied or will be satisfied with the sale at this point in time. We have an auction that took place. What I'm asking this court to do is simply remand this back to Judge Rowland with an order, close this sale. Close it. Let's get it done. There are no other liens out there. If there's a condominium association lien, it's not valid because these two parties did not sit down and have an association meeting. They did not go forward in good faith. And I'm sorry, if I were Judge Rowland, I'd probably be a little frustrated myself. When you give two people, not a body of 150 or 200 people that have condominium units in Omaha or Lincoln, two people. You got 10 days, gentlemen. Sit down. Have an association meeting. If you don't have that association meeting, either party can come in and ask for a receiver to be appointed. I think that frustration on Judge Rowland's part, it was well earned by both parties. I will say that on behalf of my client as well. He was not up to speed with this. He is as culpable as Mr. Prieser. But at this juncture, you have the power now, de novo, to send this back down and tell Judge Rowland your order will be followed. Close this sale. Any further questions?
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
1 minute and 18 seconds,
Mr. Armour.
Your Honor, Mr. Burke,
there, Justices. Mr. Burke did not have the benefit of being involved in this case for the last 5 years, and the parties did hold numerous condo association meetings, and as the reason we're here, they weren't successful. And as you see in the appellee's brief, there's no addressing of any of the assignments of error, and we can't get hung up on some of the things, the distraction issues, the red herrings, where we have specific assignments of error that have occurred, and procedurally, due process was violated. There's issues with the sale conduct. There's issues with the receiver expenses that are allocated to my client when the receiver acted outside of its scope to repair the interior, which is not part of the condo association, the interior units of that lien. And that lien, he's not the one losing here. My client, the record is replete with evidence that my client's condo is much nicer, has been upgraded, did not need significant improvements. And now all of a sudden we have a pot of money, supposedly, that's going to come from the sale. How do we split it up equitably? The conduct of the sale was not equitable. It was flawed, and this case needs reverse and remanded with specific directions.
Thank you very much. The next case of the day is State v. Darwin E. Brown.